Good Friday afternoon to you. This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And we're going to be talking today to Pat Race about this weekend's comics convention. We're also going to be learning about a special recognition for the UAS School of Management. Marjorie Hamburger is going to be here from the Juno Douglas City Museum. We're going to talk about Arbor Day and this Saturday's Coffee and Collections program. Venus and Fur from Anchorage. Going to be here, going to be talking to a couple of the actors in that of that production. And then also Dale Curtis and Robert Cohen are going to be here to talk about their Friday jazz concert at 360. That's all happening, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, tons of other stuff going on here in the studio. It all happens right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The FBI is offering a $10,000 reward for information about a woman reported missing from the Yakima Nation Reservation April 1st. Felina Blanche Metzger was last seen March 25th in her residence. Law enforcement officials say the disappearance is suspicious. Tribal police are working with the FBI in the investigation. An Oregon high school would keep its Braves mascot and team name under a pending agreement with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. The Oregonian newspaper reports the school district is close to signing the agreement with the tribe to allow continued use of the mascot that Banks High School has used for 75 years. The partnership offers opportunities for the tribe to share history and culture publicly. The agreement is a product of state rules that require schools with Native American mascots to get signed approval from one of Oregon's 9 tribal entities. The school must also hold a public hearing. If the agreement is approved, Banks would be the only high school name to retain the Braves mascot since other Oregon tribes declined agreements. Activists opposed to Native American mascots tell the Oregonian they will continue to fight offensive mascot names despite the agreement. Alaska's Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott joined residents of King Cove in Washington, D.C. Thursday to make another plea for a road between King Cove and the all-weather airport in Cold Bay. The area is on the Pacific Ocean side of the Alaska Peninsula. Mallott likens the struggle to other public land use controversies in which he said the federal government puts another concern ahead of local Alaskan needs.
Our lives are minimized, marginalized, and in many ways consciously determined to be unimportant to the point where we become faceless.
Mallott spoke at a hearing called by Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski. Alaska's congressional delegation has tried for decades to get the government to agree on a road. They say residents need a way out in a medical emergency, but that requires 11 miles of new roads in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell ruled out a road in 2013, citing in part the area's importance to waterfowl and other species. Jewell says she's trying to find an alternative. Aleutians East Borough Mayor Stanley Mack says other alternatives make no sense, especially in emergencies, given King Cove's often harsh weather and the realities of boat travel.
Strapping an injured patient in a gurney and hoisting them up from the dock up to the dock on a boat, which can be as much as 25 feet, is always a scary situation. This is basically what we have to do. Or putting elders in a crab pot and using a crane to hoist them to the top of the dock is frightening.
Murkowski says she's not giving up. She didn't say what her next move will be, but she noted that Jewell won't be Interior Secretary that much longer. Speaking to reporters after the hearing, Alaska Congressman Don Young said the secretary is valuing geese over people. Young threatened to bring in the heavy equipment and build the road himself. A coalition wants the remains of Native American children buried at the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania to be returned to tribes. The Navajo Times reports the Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition is seeking 10,000 signatures on a petition ahead of a meeting next month with officials who now run the U.S. Army War College. The coalition is seeking action under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. A South Dakota circuit court judge will pay $50,000 in attorney's fees to settle accusations he concealed documents related to a custody hearing. Judge Jeff Davis does not admit concealing the information in the case that involves the Indian Child Welfare Act. The Rapid City Journal reports Davis was a defendant in a federal lawsuit involving ICWA violations at the time of the allegations. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who had their day one at nativenews.net. Program support by the Gathering of Nations Powwow, North America's biggest powwow, April 29th and 30th in Albuquerque, New Mexico, inviting thousands of dancers and championship drum groups. The Gathering of Nations, North America's biggest powwow. Info at gatheringofnations.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Attention parents of preschoolers, right after kindergarten registration, stop by the Early Learning Fair on April 21st from 4:30 to 6:30 for engaging games, activities, and door prizes for kids. The Early Learning Fair is open to the public and offers complimentary immunizations, hearing, vision, and developmental screenings for children ages 3 to 5, and valuable resources for parents. It's a family fun-filled evening at the Valley Library Thursday, April 21st from 4:30 to 6:30. For more information, call AEYC at 789-1235.
Welcome back to the Juno Afternoon Studios. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and sitting with me right now is Pat Race from Alaska Robotics. Pat, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, hi,
you got
Andy.
A ton of stuff coming up next week, right?
Yeah.
And
yep.
So it's all around a new idea of a comic convention here in Juno, of all places. Crazy.
Yeah, I'm
what
very,
are you doing?
Very excited about
what
it.
What are you doing, man? It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be super fun.
So you know, Aaron and I go out and exhibit at comic conventions in Seattle.
You were
Seattle
just
and, yeah, we're just in Seattle. Right. We go to San Diego, and comic conventions have grown. They're much more than just, like, some guys trading comic books. It's they're these celebrations of contemporary culture and popular arts, and there's Legos and Nintendo and, you know, video games and people dressed up in costumes and
all that,
and
yeah.
So much more going on around the events, music and entertainment. And and so we're trying to do that here in Juneau. Like, it's kind of a festival of fun literary arts, but it's also about storytelling and it's but it's Juneau sized.
Yeah.
It's tiny, so we're calling it Alaska Robotics Minicon.
Minicon.
Yeah.
So just tiny and small and handheld.
Yeah. But it's all that stuff. But it's like, you know, so people will be doing cosplay, but they're like going over to Brown Boots and getting their costumes
right,
with
yeah.
Val. And
right.
You know, it's just we were doing like a children's book reading room with the Imagination Station and
cool.
We're just,
so the centerpiece of it is kind of this retreat. Right? Is that kind of the centerpiece of it,
yeah,
in a way?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of two sides to it. Like,
okay.
I wanted a chance to get together a bunch of my artist friends to kind of have a peer-to-peer, like, working artist retreat. And so that's happening here in town. And then we also wanted – I thought it would be ridiculous to bring in these amazing people and not have some community component to it. So – like Thursday, there's a tiny post office concert where some of the musicians are playing. And then Friday, we're doing a ton of school visits. We're going to take all these artists and musicians and you know, we've got Caldecott medal winner. We've got a bunch of New York Times bestsellers, and we're all going to go into different classrooms and meet with kids in the community. And then we're going to do like a community kickoff event at the library, which is this variety show we're putting together. So everyone's going to have like a little, like, it's a chance for me to share my enthusiasm and say, these are the guests and these are why they're so wonderful. These are the reasons they're so wonderful. So, you know, so I can introduce people and they can do a little 5-minute thing. And so we'll
cool.
have, yeah, like Marion and Molly Lewis and Seth Boyer are going to be kind of our house band. And then we're going to have, you know, like, so Raina Telgemeier, who kind of owns the New York Times bestseller list for comic books, is she's going to do like a reading, and then we'll have Ryan North, who writes for Marvel, the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. He'll talk about there's this time that he got stuck in a hole with his dog. It was like a drained swimming pool with the curved walls. He got stuck in there, and he got on the internet, and basically it was like a text adventure where people are like, what is in your inventory? How can we help you get you out of this hole? and he'll talk about that. And, you know, and we'll have some drawing demos. And,
cool.
Yeah, it'll be a fun little kickoff event. And then Saturday's like this convention. So we're taking over the Jack and
Saturday the 23rd.
Saturday the 23rd, yeah, is the convention day. It'll be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And We've got a lot of support from the Juno Library, and KXLL supported us, and Baranoff and the Rookery. A bunch of local businesses are all just on board with this, and it's been great. And the idea for the convention is that people can exhibit and share their artwork. We've got several people coming into town from around the state and outside the state even to bring and share their comics and their writing and things like that, their illustration projects. And then we've got some spin-off events. Like I talked about this Imagination Station reading room. Alicia's going to host people reading children's books. My mom's going to come out of retirement. She's read to everyone in Juneau. She's
long-time kind of librarian.
Local,
yeah,
children's
right.
book celebrity. Yeah, so she's going to do some reading. But along with John Clausen, who's a Caldecott Medal winner, will read his book. Kate Beaton, who wrote a great book about a princess and her little fat pony friend, will be doing a reading. And other local artists will have, Sarah Astor-Smith will read one of her books. And
very cool.
Yeah, and then Zach Gordon's opened up. We're going to do some drawing hangouts over there in the afternoon. And we'll have some lectures and things. So there'll be kind of this convention floor, sort of I guess the closest thing I can think of that's local is public market.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be kind of that market atmosphere where people are exhibiting their work.
Which is any convention anyone's ever been to. But this is about comics, and so it's about fun, and it's about, creativity and art and all those really cool things.
Yeah,
Batman's
walking
around. And then you get to walk around and be a Batman for a day, and that's awesome too. And how many exhibitors that you kind of have you?
Oh, gosh.
Is that how that works? Or
yeah.
You guys have got a bunch of different tables kind of set up? Is that it?
Yeah. It'll be packed in there. We've got a good mix of locals and people from out of town.
Cool.
So it'll be, it's going to be pretty full. And then we're going to have some, little activities. Ty Keltner, who is he owns
Lego.
The biggest collection of Legos that I know of in the state. And he's going to put together these basically sets. So everyone gets an identical set. And then they have he's doing this timed game where you say, okay, and build a truck, go. And it's just someone, you come up with this wacky little lumpy truck.
Right. That's cool.
But it should be fun. We're just bringing in people from kind of all walks of life. I'm excited about it.
And the thing that's really fun about it is that it's an all, to me, the thing that's cool about these things is that they're all ages events. And in that, what's cool about that is it's not only that, of course, children are invited and could come to participate, but you, as an adult, get to go and remember about the creativity of that, of playing with toys like Legos, which are really advanced toys, can be really incredibly advanced, but are very simple to operate as well.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, I think, is a really cool part of it.
Well, it might spark some creativity. I know a lot of adults, and I am one of them, who you really want to write a book or do a screenplay or make a short film, and that's something I've been trying to promote in this community for a long time. It's just if you want to do something, let's do it, and let's figure out how to do it really well.
Just do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
or just do
it
and learn from the process.
Yeah, get off the mark and get it done. I think that seems like that. The friends of mine that have that idea in their head and haven't done it is because you have this some sort of vision of perfection or it has to be so good.
That can
definitely
get in the way.
Yeah, and I think that it's so amazing to hear people's stories, these people who are now very, very accomplished, to be able to meet them and hear that and see that they're, that's a person. They're just a normal person.
Yeah, I made five years worth of really bad stuff, and then I did 1 year of really good stuff, and now people know my work.
Right.
Yeah,
idea of being able to allow yourself to do not the absolute best work in the world, and that gets you off the dime and gets you rolling and stuff, yeah.
So, anyways, I just hope it inspires some people to embrace whatever their passion is. Their
so
project.
Go through the kind of the timeline of events here that's happening. This is all happening next week. Kind of starts on the 21st. Is sort of the first day of it.
So there's a tiny post office concert on the 21st, and that's Marion and Molly and Seth over at the Kindred Post and part of that series that NAMI does. And then Friday the 22nd is our kickoff event for the community, and that's at the Mendenhall Valley Library. And we'll get started. People can kind of start showing up whenever, but I think the event will start right at about 6. And that'll be you want to be there at the beginning. It's not really a drop in at 6:30 kind of thing. But it'll be a showcase of some of the talent that's coming to town. And then
the new library is such a cool facility.
Yeah.
If you haven't had a chance to get out there, this is a great excuse to go do it.
Yeah.
And then, so that's Friday.
So that's Friday.
And then Saturday is the actual convention in the Jack with breakout events happening at Zach Gordon as well.
Yeah, and there will be a schedule that will be updated on our website with a much more comprehensive information.
Right.
And that's you can find that at alaskarobotics.com, or if you want to get really specific, you can go to minicon.alaskarobotics.com.
Okay.
But I'm putting up posters and things now, and it's getting a lot more granular. Like we have kind of the big outline of events is like come on Saturday, be downtown from 10 to 5 p.m.
Right.
And there's a million things.
Yeah,
going
and then
on.
There's all these things. Yeah. So just be here and then figure out what you want to do from there.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Sounds amazing.
Yeah. I mean, so actually, just to rattle off some of those things. So we've got the children's book reading room. We've got a ukulele jam. We're going to do drawing hangouts if you want to just come and draw with some professional artists and learn some tricks or some tricks.
Yes.
I mean, just practice and have fun. And, but there will be also some presentations from people who are pretty well-known artists. And then there's also going to be some music and things like that.
No, it sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's such a cool thing, Pat, that you're helping organize, and all the guys at Alaska Robotics are obviously collaborating on this to
all hands
have
on
it all,
deck.
All happen.
And a lot of volunteers. We're getting a ton of support from local businesses, and we're going to have the food carts open over here, and
cool.
It's just been great.
Yeah. All right. It's next week, starting on Thursday, goes to Friday and Saturday, a collaboration of a bunch of different events happening as part of Juno's MiniCon.
Yeah.
Comic-Con.
Yeah. Alaska Mini Robotics Mini-Con.
Mini-Con.
Our tiny little comic convention for Juno.
Pat, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And have a great con.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
It's going to be cool. All right.
Yep.
Support comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, featuring a final open skate on Sunday, April 17th from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. This skate is open to the public with complimentary admission and skates. More information available at 586-0410 or online at juno.org/parkrec/icerink.
And this is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this Friday, and with me now is Charla Brown, who's a professor out at the UAS School of Management. Charla, thanks so much for coming in, and you're here to talk about something that's really pretty cool about one of the programs that's here in at UAS, which is the Human Resources Management Program.
Right.
And it just got really interesting recognition. Tell me about what happened.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Sure.
So we have a program in the Bachelor's of Business Administration at UAS in the School of Management, and you can get that degree with an emphasis in Human Resource Management. And we submitted our curriculum through this national society. It's called the Society for Human Resource Management, and almost all human resource professionals are affiliated with this organization, and they reviewed our curriculum and gave us a stamp of approval and said that we meet all of the minimum standards that they would suggest for a degree in that area, and they've put us on their website, and we are actually the only HR program at the bachelor's level in the state of Alaska.
Wow, that's really cool. So is this a competition? Is it sort of a competition-based thing, or is it something you just submitted? You submitted it, and you know, were other people also recognized?
You know, that's
or?
A great question. It was not a competition,
yeah.
But they do have a directory, and I've reviewed the directory before. And when I joined UAS, I'm a relatively new professor there. I thought it would be really nice to see how our program stacked up, and so I sent it in kind of proactively, and they kind of went through this process. And I'm not sure exactly what they do on their side, but they have quite an extensive template and standards guideline that was put together by professionals in the field. And there are a limited number of programs that do have this recognition. I think it's 300-ish maybe in the nation. And then there are some also international programs that have been recognized.
So what are some of the components to the program that you think were the things that were standouts that they really said, well, this is why this is a really outstanding program?
Okay. Well, in addition to, well, it's built on the backbone of our bachelor's degree. So we have a very strong bachelor's of a business administration degree. And then when you emphasize in human resource management, there are several courses that you can take to show your specialization. So we have a change management course, which is kind of a high-end course to be taking. It's upper division, and we walk through how do you manage change in an organization. And it's actually a really good elective for all the business students to take, mm-hmm. and it's also an option for the management students, because when you are an HR professional, you're often implementing change, benefits, policies, procedures, culture.
Yeah, it's a constant, I would think, in that field.
It is. Yeah. It's constant. And then in terms of culture, there's also a class, organizational effectiveness, and we look at all the components that affect employees' commitment to their job and their satisfaction with their job. So how committed are you to your organization? Are you going to stay? Are you going to leave? Because it's very costly to recruit new employees. I mean, you can even think about maybe your job here and your colleagues and your culture and the behaviors that are rewarded and the behaviors that have consequences to them. So that's a really fun course that we have. We also have kind of an intro course to HR. We do a labor relations, which I think is pretty important here in Alaska. We have a lot of unionization, and we make the students give them familiarity with those topics. And we also have a strategic human resource management course. And this is where you really kind of step away from the tactical day-to-day administrative paperwork of HR, which is oftentimes mostly what people see. And how do you put programs in place that align with what your organization's trying to accomplish in terms of its end game and adding to the bottom line? So if you have an effective organization, the employees are contributing more, you're making more money, ideally. So HR can play a very critical role in terms of an organization's success.
Are the courses that are offered as part of this program ones that I know that they're part of the overall degree program, but it seems like they'd be so useful for people who are in HR, you know, working right now, but would be able to just go to those courses. Does that happen?
You know, I think on a case-by-case basis, we could consider non-degree-seeking individuals. We also have a course, BA 251, which is Management Skills Development. It's not a core course for the HR program, but it would be an excellent course for anyone who's interested in learning how to build their relationship skills, how they interact with others, how they manage stress. It's very reflective. There are a lot of assessments that take place, and then students can see their growth over the course of the semester. Mm-hmm. I should also mention that our BBA degree is 100% online. So we like to refer to it as taking our education to place-bound students. We have students in Barrow, Nome, Kodiak. I have students in Arkansas, California. I even had some students last year who were in, I think he was in Scotland, maybe. He was playing for some professional soccer team. So we have students all over, but mostly, mostly in Alaska. But we also offer campus courses for our students who live on campus, and we want to have that presence here at Auk Bay and just support Southeast Alaska and Alaska in general.
Well, it's cool. Very, very interesting to hear about, and congratulations on this special recognition as well. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just want to read our web address.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My next question was to ask you, if people want to find out more about it, how do they do that?
Okay, so our address is uas.alaska.edu. The phone number is 907-796-6402, and registration for the fall semester actually starts on Monday. So if anyone's thinking about going back to school or they want any information, I'm happy to talk to anybody about the Human Resource Management Program. It's an outstanding career, never a dull day, and it's a really fun professional option.
And what great timing to have the enrollment just starting up. So that's great. So if this discussion has sparked interest in it, make sure you contact UAS, go to the website, and contact Charla Brown, who's here with you. Charla, thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. Back with the Juno Afternoon, and joining me now is Margie Hamburger is here from the Juno Douglas City Museum, and also Jeff Barnard with the Juno Urban Forestry Project?
Partnership. Close.
I knew I'd mess it up. Jeff, you're doing a presentation at the museum. Margie, tell me a little bit about what the presentation is.
Yeah, well, I think I've come plenty of times to talk about our coffee and collection series.
Sure.
So here's another one for you tomorrow morning, 10:30 to about noon. At the museum, and this week we're calling it History of Arbor Day. Is that what we've titled it?
Alaska's
First Arbor Day Remembered. So Arbor Day is not until May, and there's going to be a whole other thing that's happening, so people should gear up. So this is, Jeff was just saying, this is the opening act.
So can you give us a little primer on
so actually the first official Arbor Day in Alaska was at the city library, now museum. And so this is, it was in 66, so shazam, 50th anniversary.
There you go, all right,
so,
wow.
Yeah, this is kind of presenting some of the things that led up to the first one. And a lot of people don't know this stuff. So.
Is it something that kind of happens? Has it been happening on a yearly basis ever since?
Right.
Or does it get skipped some?
It happened before then, too. You know, Arbor Day is all over, but this was... you know, like states have an official Arbor Day, and we were kind of late to the party because we're one of the last states. So we finally got one, an official Arbor Day in '66, and then it was on the library grounds, and it honored actually Governor Heintzelman, which not many people know about. He was one of our territorial governors.
I know the ridge, but that's all I know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
right.
See, there you go. Tomorrow morning, find out all about it.
Yeah, very cool. What are some of the highlights of things that have...
So just kind of some of the different factors going into it. Like, actually, the Heintzelman was involved in building the library. Because the library, that was our first city library that was built kind of with the Rotary and a bunch of different other groups kind of coming together. And Juno basically funded citizens funded most of the construction costs. That's kind of the way they did things back in those days.
Right. It wasn't a city. It wasn't so much of a city budget item,
right,
but
it was,
more.
Yeah, we were a territory in those days.
Right.
And so it's kind of involves Heinzelman and some of the other groups and the parts they played and kind of talk about. And talk a little bit about some of the modern things going on.
Well, I have an Arbor Day legend of my own, which is that I have a Douglas fir tree in my front yard, and it's one of the Ed Byarsky's come by and said, "Yep, that's definitely what it is," because I say that, and it supposedly came home in a little styrofoam cup, in a girl's little styrofoam cup, in my 1973 Arbor Day.
Ooh, wow! Oh, that's interesting.
Wouldn't be surprised.
And it's massive now. It's a huge, massive tree.
I think it is a Doug fir.
Wow, wow. And actually, if anybody's out there listening and wants to show up tomorrow, we would love to find people who are at that 1966 event.
Right.
Have we found anybody yet?
Not yet. So what happened was a class in Kodiak contacted their senator and said, "Hey, we don't have an official Arbor Day." And he put in a bill in the legislature. And they passed the bill, and the first Arbor Day was here. And they invited, Governor Egan came, and they invited, took a class from Capital School and also from St. Anne's. And so two classes were there. So we're thinking maybe fourth graders in 1966. So maybe if there was anybody that would make them about class of 74-ish, if anybody knows anything about that, that'd be great to have them come to the real, to the next Arbor Day or whatever, just contact us.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's starting when?
So tomorrow, 10:30, at the museum, Heritage Copy and the Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum are sponsors, so we'll have hot beverages. And if I can quickly just talk about the...
Sure.
We have actually two more Saturdays following that. The next Saturday after this one on the 23rd, same time, same place, same coffee. The same coffee provider.
Fresh coffee.
We have a program called Local Heroes. And actually, that's me. I'm going to do that one and tell stories about some significant people in our history in Juneau who contributed to our community that we can call heroic. So we're going to tell stories about that on the 23rd. And then on the following one, which is the 30th, am I up to the 30th? Yeah, 23 plus 7. So we are remembering, we've been doing a lot of work about Joseph Alexander, the commercial photographer. We're still trying to get photos identified, so we're going to have 3 days of photos just out and about in the museum if anyone wants to stop by. But on that Saturday, Sharon Gateman and Peter Freer are going to help us all tell stories about a lot of people who have been here for a long time, either had their wedding photo or their graduation photo or their passport photo or their, cute baby pictures, whatever, taken by Joseph Alexander. So there's a lot of really fun stories about that.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's all part of the Coffee and Collections program that happens Saturdays at the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and Jeff is going to be speaking about Arbor Day tomorrow.
Yes.
Sounds great. And Marjorie, thanks so much for coming in
and
letting us know what's going
on
at the museum.
Great.
All right, coming up next, here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 15th of April, 2016. It's the birthday of Henry James, author of 20 novels, 112 stories, 12 plays, and several books of travel and criticism. Born in New York City, 1843. Father was a friend of Thoreau, Emerson, Hawthorne. Family traveled throughout Europe. When Henry James was in his 20s and writing short stories, he moved to Europe because he could live cheaply there. And he fell in love with England. He wrote, "The capital of the human race happens to be British." What he really wanted to be, though, was a dramatist. But one of his plays was poorly received, and James himself was booed on opening night, and that discouraged him. He never earned much money from his writing, nor did he win the acclaim that he had hoped for. His friend Edith Wharton lobbied for him to win the Nobel Prize, to no avail. And towards the end of his life, James got a generous advance from Scribner's for a new book, an advance that actually secretly came from Edith Wharton. It was on this day, 1802, William Wordsworth and his sister Dorothy were walking along the banks of Ullswater Lake, 9 miles long in the Lake District, and they happened upon a profusion of daffodils. Dorothy wrote down a description of the daffodils, and Wordsworth wrote the poem 5 years later that begins, "I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils beside the lake beneath the trees fluttering and dancing in the breeze." It's the birthday of Leonardo da Vinci, born Leonardo di Ser Piero da Vinci in Vinci, Italy, 1452, best known for his Mona Lisa and The Last Supper, two of the most famous paintings in the world, but he left fewer than 30 paintings when he died, and most of those were unfinished. He was a perfectionist and a procrastinator, having worked on the Mona Lisa on and off for the last 15 years of his life. He was drawing up plans for inventions like the submarine, the helicopter, the armored tank, and the alarm clock, none of which came to fruition in his life. Here's a poem by Jo McDougall. Her husband away on a business trip, she takes the old Pontiac in for repairs. The young service manager comes round to explain, as if someone were dying, what will have to be done. "It's more," he says, "than we thought. I want to tell him it's all right. I've heard worse. We're all orphans here. Live long enough, you might as well be a spider in a corner of the basement, year in, year out, marvelously disguised. But I like this young man trying to help me understand that the car is on its last breath. Another hour or so, ma'am," he says. "I'm sorry for the wait." "It's all right. I'll be home soon. Perhaps to find you unpacking, the cat murmuring to himself like a contented chicken, the radio waffling through its noise, the replenished Pontiac exhaling slowly in the drive." A poem by Jo McDougall. Her husband away on a business trip, she takes the old Pontiac in for repairs. From her collection, The Undiscovered Room, published by Tavern Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Back in the studios here where we're coming up with million-dollar ideas. I'm telling you, I love this idea, the Garrison Keillor Siri app. I think that's we got to do that.
Great, let's do it.
I love it. Take a left on Main. All right, so I'm here with Kevin Crawley and Kara Tetlier here from Travel Juno. I like this new kind of branding that's happening here, the Travel Juno folks who are putting on a really cool thing, which is the travel fair happening tomorrow, and you've been working your tail off on this. Kevin?
Yeah, slightly.
So tell me all about it.
Yeah, Travel Juno, you may know us as the Juno Convention and Visitors Bureau. We're sponsoring, it's the 14th annual travel fair, which is at the Jack from 12 to 4 tomorrow. And so we have a lot of cool things going on. We have 30 different vendors, our member businesses, tours and attractions, accommodations as well, lots of cool things to get more info about. Discounts, a lot of local discounts are offered by those vendors, as well as some free, you know, raffled tours and things like that. We are doing a social media promotion, giving away two round-trip Alaskan Airlines tickets. So you have to come to the event and post a photo with the event hashtag there. And then we're going to have a beer garden with Alaskan Brewing.
I'll be there for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
my other capacity at the brewery, yep.
And we have a bunch of food trucks as well. Pucker Wilson's and Happy Camper out front, of course, and then Peterson's Pretzels, Copa, and V Cellar Door will be out in the back behind the deck next to the beer garden.
Nice.
So something for the whole family, and KXLL will be playing music there too, so it should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. Bring your whole family, everybody you know, your neighbors.
Right. And then, Kara, you're doing sort of a separate thing happening at the same time. Tell me about what you're up to tomorrow.
Well, I manage the volunteer program for Travel Juno, and one of our first trainings of the season, the kickoff, is the Tours and Attractions training, which happens side by side of the travel fair, where members that have booths, or some of them just come in anyway, and speak to the volunteers and tell them about their tour or their operation or what they have going on this year. So it's we have 30 members participating in that training tomorrow, so it's all just back-to-back 5 minutes at a time, give
but
the volunteers information.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing for people to kind of get a lay of the land, sort of, right?
Yeah,
as
yeah.
We're heading into the season here.
Yeah, and the firsthand, you know, talking with the members, being able to ask them questions about it and them being able to explain it the way they would like to the volunteers so they know exactly how to share that information with the visitors coming into town asking those same questions.
And then tell me about the volunteers. Like, how are they then dispersed through town? And, you know, tell me about that.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with that.
Well, maybe I can help.
Yes.
So we have.
I'm not volunteering right now.
Well, if you want to change your mind, let me know.
Okay.
I'm your girl. So we have 4 different volunteer sites, locations around town. We have 2 downtown, one at the cruise ship terminal, one at Marine Park. And then we have 1 at the airport baggage claim, and we have 1 at the ferry terminal. So we have volunteers at all of those locations throughout the summer. And at the ferry terminal and at the airport, they're based on arriving planes and ferries. And then at the downtown locations, they're 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We have volunteers staffing those there to answer questions for all those people coming into town.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So that's really fascinating. And all this kind of effort to make sure that people's visit here to Juneau is as great as possible.
That's right. That's exactly the point. Help them have a good time. We want them to come back and we want them to have a good impression of our city. And our volunteers are always warm and friendly and have good information and help people figure out where they want to go. Or sometimes it's a medical thing. I need a dentist in a hurry. You know, where am I going to go? How am I going to do this? Or sometimes it's really just, as I said a minute ago, where do I find the best Zulu?
Recommendation,
so,
that kind of thing,
recommendation, shopping, food, all that good stuff.
Right.
Tours.
Cool. Huh. And so just run through me the details on if people want to go tomorrow, you know, everything they need to know to go. Number one, don't watch when you turn into Centennial Hall now, right? Or, you know, you can't get to the Jack by turning here on what's Willoughby. Is this
Whittier?
Yeah, it's kind of all under construction, so turn over by the state office building instead.
Right. If you want to get into the parking lot, it's over by the state office building. So I'm sure people will figure it out, but Whittier is one way going towards the water.
Right.
So you got to enter from the other side. But there's, plenty of parking. 12 to 4, we'll have everything started at 12. The doors open. Businesses will be there, so stop on by anytime. And it's open to the whole family. If you want to participate in the beer garden, make sure to bring, you know, your identification and bring a healthy appetite for some of the great food that's going to be there. And keep an eye out, you know, not just for you as a local, but your visiting friends and family this summer. You know, it could be a great opportunity to get some good discounts or just more information about, like, I don't know where they should stay because I have, you know, a 1-bedroom apartment and nowhere to go for them. So, just bring an open mind and hope everyone has a great time.
I'm sure it will be a great time. Kevin and Kara, thanks so much for coming in from Travel Juno. And go check out the really fun thing that's happening tomorrow, the travel fair. It's happening over at the Jack, starting at 12. Thanks again. Here's
Thank
Bird
you.
Note.
This is Bird Note. Sometimes in the spring or summer, you might come across a young songbird that's just left the nest. It's a fledgling, fully feathered, but with wings and tail still looking a bit stubby. Fluttering furiously on those short wings, it flies a short distance to the safety of a nearby bush. Like a toddler, it's unsteady, awkward, and learning the ropes. it may look like this young bird has left the nest too soon. In the case of the black-capped chickadee, just 16 days after hatching. But there's an adaptive advantage for nestlings to exit the nest as soon as they are able, even if they're not quite ready to fend for themselves. A nest full of begging young can be a target for a predator. Rather than risk the whole brood to a raccoon or snake, adults may feed the young, one stashed here, one there, in greater safety as they toddle from shrub to shrub. By about the 10th day after the young leave the nest, though, chickadee adults stop feeding them and may even turn aggressive, meaning it's time for the youngsters to disperse and feed themselves. At this point, they're fully fledged, should have their full set of flight feathers, and be ready to take to the skies. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
Sorry, miss, the audition is over.
But I was meant to play this part. Just let me read for it.
And thus begins Venus and Fur, a seductive, darkly funny play that tests the wills and invites both carnal and cerebral excitement.
Venus and Fur sparks with the friction of two people who challenge and attract each other.
Venus and Fur opens April 13th for 1 week only at Perseverance Theater. For more information and tickets, visit ptalaska.org, The Jack, Hearthside Books, or call 463-TIXS.
And let's talk about that more with the two actors that are in Venus and Fur. Thanks very much for coming in. Colby Bleicher is here and Aaron Wiseman. Thanks so much for coming in and for coming down from Anchorage. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So let's expound on that. You kind of guys, that was the first time you guys got to hear that PSA, so you were kind of laughing along a little bit. Funny to hear someone else playing your role, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we presented Venus and Fur at Serena's Theater last year, and Perseverance was generous enough to express interest in bringing us down from Anchorage. So we've done a remount of the show and changed a few things and kind of done an improved version. And so we opened last night and are here just through the weekend.
What are some of the challenges of doing a show that only has two people in it the entire time? It seems like it's
one of the challenges is just maintaining the energy and the character, because it's only us for just over 90 minutes straight. In this case, we don't have an intermission, but it's a pretty rapid paced story, so mm-hmm. I think it keeps people interested. But yeah, just keeping that up, you don't have any breaks, so you got to be prepared to.
That must be a little. That's tough, right? If something's maybe going a little wrong or something, it seems like it can almost snowball. Or you must have techniques for figuring out. Okay, we have to hit. Even if something messes up, we hit this one post.
Yeah,
is that what you do? Or
it requires a lot of trust in each other, I think. I mean, there have been moments, not this time around, but during the original run, where if something was a little bit off with the tech, or if something unexpected happens, there's no chance to reset. And unlike in other shows, there's no chance to go off stage and compose yourself. You just keep going. And so
you're both on stage for the entire, both of you on stage for the entire time, no exiting, no.
Aaron's on stage from the first moment I come in, about a minute in, and then we're on stage the whole time.
Wow.
So
that's pretty intense.
Once you're there,
right?
You're there.
It is.
Yeah.
But is that fun too?
It's exhilarating, because it is an intense story. And so as we, the stakes are ratcheted up and all that, it's a fun ride. Even for the actors, we're working ourselves up, into the story. It's a pretty cool experience as an actor, actually. So even though there's challenges, ultimately, I find this a rush and really gratifying.
Is there things that you feel like you have to do to prepare for a performance like this that you do differently if it's more of an ensemble thing, or more of a thing where you're, more of a, I guess I would say normal, where you're walking on and walking off, and
or
do you go through the same process? Or
it's, I suppose, the preparation, the things that we've been very careful about is making sure we definitely are rock solid on all of the lines. There's even times, I think, when you do a bigger ensemble piece where you do exit, And I'll even, you know, on occasion, you'll just to keep sharp, you might even just glance at your script again, kind of get it back in your mind. And, you know, you freshen up on when you step off stage. Well, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
So in this case, just as we ramped up to reprise this whole production, we were very careful to be running our lines, you know, before we even went to rehearsal and just start to finish. You know?
And what was the time period between the original production and this one?
Almost a year.
Okay. What was the impetus behind really revamping it?
I think just having spent some time away from it, and we are doing a slightly different version of the script. So that means that a few moments change a little bit. And also just having 10 months for it to kind of percolate in our brains, certain things that, you know, now having been here throughout this week, just here as actors, we've had the time and ability to say, hey, let's work on this moment and sharpen it. And so, you know, that's harder to do when you're rehearsing in the evenings after work, like we were last year.
Yeah. When you are in an intense play like this, where there's so much dialogue, you have to know every moment, does it, I'm just curious about, you were saying it kind of percolates in your head. I almost wondered whether it, once you're done performing that last performance, like it just goes away. In a way, but it just, does it stay with you more? Did this play stay with you more than others?
Well, perhaps that is. Every actor is a little different, of course. But I would say, as in terms of the way my mind works, yeah. Often when I'm done with the production, it generally goes away. I don't, unless it's really special monologue parts or something. You might remember lines. In this case, I guess we knew. Practically since the beginning, actually, Art Roach from Perseverance and I believe even Boston Christopher back then when he was here came and saw our opening night. So that was wonderful. And then that was when they came and approached and said, you know, have you heard we were talking about bringing you down? And
oh, cool.
So we kind of, we hadn't solidified it, but we knew we were going to, by the time we were done, we essentially knew we would be doing it again. So I think it stuck in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I didn't allow myself to completely erase the lines from memory, but of course it required some intense studying, going back into it, like, oh, wow, I said this line? Huh, I guess so.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, it's Venus and Fur, and you, and once again, I don't know if I said it, but you're from Cyrano's, from the company Cyrano's in Anchorage. Is that...
Yes,
am I
well,
saying that? I
they
mean,
don't really have an intact company.
I see.
But yes, this was a Cyrano's production.
That was okay, it was a Cyrano's production, and now it's being brought down to Perseverance Theater, and it's playing for just a week. So for folks listening, make sure you
Friday,
get
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's it. Not even a week. It's three.
We opened last night, and so it's just the weekend.
Yes, it's just this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, so just three more performances?
That's it.
All right, so your chance to see it is right now. It's Colby Bleicher and Aaron Wiseman in Venus and Venus on Fur?
In.
Venus in Fur. This is a, see, this is a typo. It got me messed up.
Got it.
Venus in Fur. Thanks so much for coming in, you guys.
Thank
and
you.
Break a leg and have a great performance.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Velvet Underground with Venus and Furs. We're going to talk about a different kind of music now. Friday Jazz Concert at 360 is happening with Dale Curtis and Robert Cohen, who are joining us now. Dale, thanks so much for coming in. And Robert, good to see you as always.
You too, Andy.
Sir, yes. And last time I saw you, I think I was maybe dancing with Colette Costa. I don't know. That might have been.
You were there.
Seared in your memory.
I will. It's all in the vault.
It's all in the vault. Now it isn't. Now it's on the air. Well, Dale, thanks so much for coming in.
Well,
tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm originally from Northern California, and I started playing at an early age music and just fell in love with it. I started playing professionally when I was 18, and I spent my first career, I guess you could say, was a professional musician. I was in an Army band, and then after the Army, I was doing clubs in Sacramento, and then the band I was playing with wanted to go on the road, and I didn't want to have that lifestyle. I had a wife and a three-year-old, so we just on a whim, we moved to Homer, Alaska, and I've been in Alaska ever since.
And yeah.
It was 1974.
It's been a while now.
It's been a while.
Right.
You're
getting towards sourdough status.
I wouldn't live anywhere else, but, living in Ketchikan, I'm so fortunate because there's such an active music community there. I play in a big band and a community band, and there's a little jazz club on the weekends we play, so...
We are really fortunate in Southeastern, I think. We're relatively small towns, and yet we have these vibrant music scenes in all of them.
That's true.
It's so incredible. The Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, great music and great artists living there. Let's play a little bit of your music here, and then Robert, I'll get you to talk a little bit about what's happening. Is it happening within hours?
Within hours.
Yes.
It's
happening this evening. My goodness. I'm cutting into your rehearsal time right now. But let's hear a title track to...
Rehearsal, what's that?
I don't know. I was just going to wonder. We're not going to rehearse.
We're jazz musicians.
We're just going to go up and play.
So this is the title track to Bridge to Nowhere. Example of some of the music that you can hear in just a little bit at 360. Robert, when's this happening?
This is happening tonight at the At 360 Space in the KTOO building, 360 Egan Drive, and we're starting at 7:30 this evening. Going to play till 9, maybe a little past. It all depends on whether the wind picks us up and how far we think we can go.
Is this also going to be made into a televised
No, this is not a radio station sponsored event.
Just a cool jazz concert.
This is our venue. We rented the space.
Okay, cool.
And have done the promotion.
Yeah.
With many thanks to KTOO and KRNN for media co-sponsorship. But apart from that, it's our baby. So.
How did you guys get together to start playing?
Well, I've known about Dale for a while, but we didn't meet and hadn't played together till. Just a couple of years ago on a KTOO-KRNN-sponsored event, which was the Blue Note 75th Anniversary Concert that we did at the Gold Town Theater and was recorded for broadcast.
I think we met before that, though. I was the high school band director in Ketchikan, so coming up with different festivals and things. I think I sat in with you and Doug Bridges somewhere.
That's right,
the hangar down there?
Blue in Merchants Wharf at... what is now a different restaurant.
Long ago, some other... Yeah, right.
And I pushed it out of my mind.
There you go, yes.
I think we had a dispute over payment at one point.
That's sort of... That just happens, yeah. Well, once again, it's Dale Curtis, part of the Dale Curtis Quintet. And is that still ongoing?
No, it's just some friends
some
that
friends.
I am fortunate enough to get together.
Cool.
Ed Littlefield, he's well known here.
Yep.
Christian Fabian, Paul Myers, and... Bob Kindred, Ed's from the East Coast. Of course, Sitka and the other guys are New York guys. And this was recorded at the Tony Bennett studio 5 years ago, almost to the day. But what we're going to do tonight, I put together a set that's going to be like a jazz history lesson. We're going to start out with traditional jazz and go through all the different eras, big band, the Blue Note, the cool era, and end up with Latin jazz and so on.
Oh, that sounds great.
Just run about I got 24 tunes on that list, and I think we can do them all in 90 minutes. Depends on how much I talk.
That's right. All right, well, it's happening tonight. It's at the 360 Studio. It's the Friday Jazz Concert at 360, and it's going to be Dale Curtis, Robert Cohen. Is there other folks playing as well with you guys?
Yeah, we have bass and drums as well. Alexei Painter on bass, and the venerable Clay Good on the drum kit.
Very good. You guys calling the band anything in particular?
It's Dale Curtis and the Rob Cohen Trio.
There you go.
I brought this for you for your car, man.
Very
you can
good.
Take that.
I'll do it. All right. This is what the kids, this is what the people used to call a CD. I don't know. The kids don't use
it's
these
still
anymore.
A CD.
Right. That's right.
Why is it square?
That's right. Why is it square? All right, you guys, thanks so much and have a great performance tonight.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Talked about New York values at the debate, and he talked about it with anger and really hatred.
New Yorkers will soon have their say in the presidential contest.
For Friday, April 15th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Robert Siegel. This hour, we'll hear the latest political news from the state that three of the presidential candidates can call home.
Also, the Pope visits Greece, where he'll meet refugees on the island of Lesbos.
The Vatican says the trip is humanitarian, not political.
Cari migranti e refugiati.